good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak on the first Tuesday episode of the football season, at least of the pro football season, but also college. And we got some college games to talk about today. Yesterday on the Monday edition of the podcast, in case you missed it, we went through all of the NFL action from Sunday. We know there were a couple of games that happened on Monday. We're going to get to those. We're going to touch on all those performances later in the week. But we got to talk about the college guys, Ben. It's a draft podcast. We're here to marry both
you have no
college
evidence.
And pro. It's called Locked On NFL Draft.
Dang it, you win.
We've got to get to some college talk. But people, before we do, I said it yesterday, but this football season's going to be different. And Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter what you're watching this season, pro or college. Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through any game day experience and be a member of the League of Football Watchers. What a group. What a phenomenal group to be a part of. These passionate fans are real, generational, talented fans that Pepsi consistently fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch. We had a lot to watch this weekend. Certainly we recapped it on Sunday, but the Saturday games too. It's not college football exactly how we remember it, right? I mean, there are quite a few teams that are not participating.
Louisiana Lafayette is a top 20 team right now,
hey,
brother.
Listen, and they deserve every bit of it. You put some respect on the name of Louisiana Lafayette for absolutely manhandling what was supposed to be QB4 in Brock Purdy.
It's unfair. Like, here's the thing. At the end of the day, it was the first game off of a ridiculous season, a ridiculous offseason, with his number one target, that being Charlie Kohler, out, which they didn't know until kind of the last second there. Charlie Kohler, the tight end, a guy that we really liked, tight end 4 for us for Iowa State, missed the game with an injury. They also had an injury on the interior offensive line that they didn't expect them to deal with coming into the game. The circumstances were not great for Purdy, but Louisiana Lafayette holds Iowa State scoreless in the second half, wins it 31-14 in Ames. And when you ask why the Raging Cajuns were able to control the game against the Cyclones so handily, there were two special teams touchdowns for the Raging Cajuns, if memory serves. There were a couple turnovers, but the real story, you know, qualitatively, starts with Brock Purdy just struggling. They had drops on third down. He was bailing out of good pockets. He was not accurate in neutral situations, early down, underneath, middle of the field. Stuff that should be easy, stuff that should be money for a player of Purdy's accuracy. And then when it comes to the deep stuff and the tight windows where his arm strength starts to be a little bit of a concern,
right,
you had a fall off there as well. So, I mean, Purdy, if Purdy goes out and has the same season against the Big 12 this year as he did last year, I don't really think anybody's going to look at and think about this Louisiana Lafayette game. It's going to be written off as opening week COVID anomaly moving on. But Louisiana Lafayette gave the quote to the announcers, I believe it was the DC, I can't remember his name, who said, "We don't think Iowa State's used to seeing man because they play in the Big 12. We play man. We have the athletes. We're just going to play man coverage." And it's quarterback's responsibility to find the matchups you like and throw them open. And Purdy couldn't do it. And if this theme continues,
right, but that's
really
that's an ask, you know. Like, you got, like, we're talking about a guy making a transition from a college quarterback to an NFL quarterback. We're not trying to figure out how to win more games for Iowa State. Well, I mean, we kind of are, you know, like, as a secondary. But we're trying to figure out if this guy can play in the NFL. And if you can't throw those kinds of passes, you're not going to play in the NFL. Dude, I'm just looking at it right now. We've talked about this before. Like, how does this COVID season really affect the draft class? I'm sure every radio show that you have been on that's had you want to guess so far, they're like, wow, well, you know, how are you going to evaluate this guy? What's different? Dude, when I look at this quarterback class, this strange season has really thrown a wrench in this. You have Trevor Lawrence at the top. We already know about Trevor Lawrence. But then Justin Fields, he ain't playing. Big Ten. Trey Lance, he ain't playing. FCS. Brock Purdy.
Big Ten might be voting on, you know, saying, oh, we were dumb. Just kidding.
All right. Like 24 hours. You are right. You are right. Brock Purdy maybe ain't it. And we already had him as like potential QB4. Jamie Newman opted out. Kyle Trask, people are skeptical of. Spencer Sanders from Oklahoma State. Desmond Ridder, who I know that right after Brock Purdy was struggling, you were like, Desmond Ridder, QB4, baby. And then Tanner Morgan, Minnesota. So as of right now, not playing. Kellen Mond, who's been super shaky. Sam Ellinger, who we're going to talk about in a little bit. But like, this is the quarterback clash. You know what I'm saying? We've got Trevor Lawrence at the very top. And then what?
Really, right.
And then what?
It's really very interesting because, quick, off the top of your head, when was the last draft class that we cared about QB4 in the month of September? We're usually never here.
Yeah, but yeah, it's
usually
fair, sure.
Who's QB1? Or we're like, hey, are QB2 and QB3 gonna even be good, right? And we're not there. Like,
well, I think
like,
2018, we knew that a lot of guys were going to be drafted.
Right, you know. But that was, okay, those guys are high up. Nobody agreed on QB1 up until the day of the draft. Right. Whereas I think that there's a consensus who QB1 is. And then, all right, there's some debate about 2 versus 3, Fields versus Lance. But I think I can say this, you know, with certainty. I think there's 3 players who very clearly would warrant a top 5 selection at quarterback. And then the 4th player.
You're putting Lance in there already, right? Top 5?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then it's debatable if the 4th quarterback is like worth a top 50, worth the top 64.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. That disparity, that delta, that chasm is so significant this year. So what we're looking for out of Ridder and Newman and Purdy and Trask and Ellinger is not be a first rounder. It's be the guy that the Atlanta Falcons are willing to take you to put behind Matt Ryan. Be the guy that the Steelers draft to replace Mason Rudolph behind Big Ben. Be the guy that a team with an old quarterback wants to develop, because I'm not sure that guy exists in this class just yet.
When's the last time? I'm just asking this question off the cuff because I thought of it on top of my head. When's the last time we saw like a draft class get real desperate for a quarterback? 2011 comes to mind with like Christian Ponder and Blaine Gabbert and Jake Locker after Cam Newton went number 1 overall, but I can't remember how highly those guys were like. Did we really all think that like Jake Locker was going to be incredible or Blaine Gabbert was going to be incredible? These are
like,
top 10 picks,
right.
So I don't exactly remember, but that's what's coming to my head because I'm with you. I don't know who QB4 is, but more important than that, I don't even know where they get drafted at this point because
right.
Purdy's not it, and if Ritter's got a nice arm to him, but I'm just looking down this list. Like, who even has the potential here that you would be Kyle Trask? Like, does Kyle Trask and Desmond Ridder have the highest potential to be, okay, QB4, I'm cool with taking you in the top 50, kind of like closer to that 40-50 right. range?
I think so. I mean, like, we had Purdy preseason QB4, and I think it's his spot to lose. Because, like I said, I think if he has the Big 12 season that he had last year, mm-hmm. this year, and again, it's like, no, Newman's not playing. And I don't think Newman's 2019 measures up to Purdy's 2019.
I don't think so either.
Ridder was banged up in 2019. He's got to play and he's got to be successful, right? So it's like, it's Purdy's to lose. But I agree with you in the sense that Purdy's not a super attractive developmental guy. The 2011 class, I struggle because like I was, how old am I, 23? I was 14.
12.
You know what I mean? Like,
wow,
I
was actually almost close.
Yeah. So I'm not very well calibrated to that year and what that class was like. But in 2014, Blake Bortles went 3. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, who else was in that class? Who's in the 2014
class? I mean, that's Johnny Manziel at 22.
Oh, yeah, that is Manziel.
Teddy at 32. And
oh,
then
big rip.
Carr at, 38?
Yeah, something early second round.
Yeah. Then where was Garoppolo in that class? Garoppolo was in that class or was he a year later?
Where was Jimmy? He was in that class. He was second round.
He was late second in that late class. Yes, he was. I know what I'm talking about. Right. So I think that's probably your year.
Also,
where you
Taj Boyd, big shout out, 6th round pick.
Yeah.
Clemson, great.
That's probably the class you point to where you say we were desperate for quarterback talent. But it's not a first round desperation in this upcoming class. It's that second, third round desperation.
Yeah.
We had Purdy and his performance against...
No, but I think that it becomes first-round desperation because you know the teams always do this. I feel like they just try... If you give them an inch with a quarterback, they're going to take it a mile. And I don't even know if QB4 is going to be in the realm to give teams an inch. That's kind of, I guess, what I'm saying here, is that I don't even know if we're going to get a quarterback that's going to be even close to the top five, top ten with these other three players. It's not shaping up to be. We still have yet to see some other guys really have their season get underway, but like I said, I don't know. I don't want to go too hard on Purdy. You're right. Maybe it sounds like I'm just going too hard on him from 1 week, but man, I was not encouraged by that. As somebody who already kind of was skeptical about his arm strength in the NFL anyways, didn't look great this past weekend. It really didn't.
Right. Now, we haven't talked about him. We should pivot to him and have a conversation about it. Sam Ellinger against UTEP.
Okay. Let's talk about it.
So they've got a new offensive coordinator in Texas. It's I'm going to remember his name. You ready?
Yeah. No, I'm ready. You are going. I am manifesting this for you. You are going.
I see. The thing is,
to remember his name.
I know how it's like Yurkitch. I don't know how it's pronounced. I've only ever seen it writing, but it's the old Oklahoma State guy. Is helped been like the quarterbacks coach and the offensive coordinator.
Nikola Jokic.
Yurkitch. Anyway, so he comes and Oklahoma State.
Great
State,
podcasting,
baby, I mean,
right there.
Vertical. We're pushing. We're spreading. We're spreading. We're shredding. We're hitting intermediate windows off of play action. They bring that to Ellinger, and yes, it's against UTEP. I'm going to be the first to acknowledge that it was against UTEP. But Ellinger threw for 430 yards and 5 touchdowns, and they didn't need him to be that which Texas offenses have previously asked him to be, which is a big-time runner. He had 3 carries for 12 yards. So Ellinger was just eviscerated the UTEP defense for 2 halves. They had 45 points at the half, so for 2 quarters, excuse me. What's important here is not necessarily the idea that Ellinger's getting better as a passer. I'm not sure that he is. I'm not sure that he will. I think he'll always be a little bit of a shot putter, a little bit of a Tebow, not a highly accurate player. But if you can prove that Ellinger as an intermediate passer, as an RPO passer, is enough that he can be a prospect like Tebow, who has value because of his running ability, has value because of what he can do in goal line packages and what he can do as a scrambler. The developmental quarterback du jour for this past class was Jalen Hurts, and I know that for a fact because the Eagles took him at 53 overall. Ellinger can be that dude, because if we transition our look at the second tier of quarterbacks from, all right, who's got the most live arm to develop, where we talk about Ritter and we talk about Newman or whatever, and we transition.
Which feels very Paxton Lynchy to me at this point with this draft class.
And instead we transition to who's got the running ability to develop a running package for it now that Lamar is the best and Taysom Hill's been fun and the Eagles drafted Jalen Hurts. That dude is Ellinger. That he's the runner among all those guys. And so I think that a good passing year will help shore up some of the concerns, but it's going to be Ellinger's dual threat ability that you see him as a solid passer, you see him as a running guy, and you can get a package out of him even in his rookie year if he's behind a veteran quarterback.
All right, before we go on to our next prospect that we're going to talk about, I got to talk to the good people about NFL Game Pass. Guys, the season is here. The kickoffs have happened. This season, get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. You can catch every single snap from every single game with full game replays, and you can see all the plays in just 45 minutes with condensed games. If you got a busy day, you want to just catch some film on a guy or rewatch your favorite team, you can get it all in your time. You can relive all the gutsy calls, all the crazy catches, all the wild comebacks, the breakout stars, every single game, every single week. It is all the action, all the football that you could possibly handle in one place. And NFL Game Pass is also the only place where you can replay all of the games all season long. You're going to learn from the league's best players with over 40, count them, 40 NFL Game Pass film sessions, including ones from Deshaun Watson, Stephon Gilmore, Devontae Adams, many, many more. I've learned a ton from watching those over the summer. I even outside of this ad, I couldn't recommend it more. Those are very educational, and they're awesome to hear from the best in the league. NFL Game Pass also provides access to the entire NFL Films Archive, so all those football live things that you like to watch on a lazy Saturday afternoon when there's not football or something, you can catch those at any weekday night now if you have NFL Game Pass. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to get started on your free trial today. That is NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. Before we moved on from the Texas game, just wanted to say, Texas has a rushing stat from Malcolm Epps, who they have here rushing for 40 yards on zero carries.
Yeah, it's a it's an undefined yards per carry. It's really just the greatest YPC you can get. So it's just the ideal.
He didn't touch the ball.
What was your efficiency? Undefined. 40 overall. You love to see it.
I love just when stats get messed up like that, and I just get to highlight it there. Okay, where are we going next?
What do you want to talk about?
Dude, Arkansas State. This John Adams Jr.,
you're gonna
dude.
Fall in love with another high-volume group of five wide receiver in a crazy passing offense who's just the only dude on his whole team.
I'm wondering where they hid this guy last year, because Omar Bayless led the country last year. This offense force-fed Omar Bayless everything they possibly could. Pretty sure he led the country in receiving yards and receptions, although it could be wrong with receptions. But, man, he was up at the top of the list. John Adams Jr. was on the team. He's a senior. He's on the other side. How did this dude not get the ball? He was awesome. And so, you know, it was a fun day for Arkansas State because they beat up on Kansas State. That was one of the upsets, many upsets that happened this past weekend. But I was super impressed with the man. He had three touchdowns on the day, almost 100 yards. I didn't know anything about John Adams going into this weekend, and I just continue to see flash play after flash play. And that's not even including that sick one-handed catch in the corner of the end zone that he barely dropped because the defensive back made a great play on it after grabbing that thing out of midair with just one hand. Like, I need to watch more tape on this guy. I wanted to make sure throughout this podcast that we shouted out John Adams Jr. because in a year where he should have got a lot more attention last year, he seems to be playing that Omar Bayless role this year where they're like, yep, we are giving this guy the ball. This is our game plan every single week, and there's nothing you can do about it. I'm all for it. I cannot wait to watch him the rest of the season.
I'm pretty sure, if I heard the broadcast correctly, and I may be wrong here, that he plays on the Arkansas State basketball team as well, which...
Actively. Okay, now I got to look this up. Now I have to look this up.
John Adams in 2017 played 11 games, all as a reserve role as a true freshman. So in 2017, he was definitely playing on their basketball team.
Wow.
He may have pivoted by now, but no, he's a ton of fun, very big dude. Hold on.
It says that he is the son of Jonathan Adams Jr., but it says in his bio that he's Jonathan Adams Jr. So is he the third? Because that matters, because anytime we get the three Roman numerals in here, we're talking about up in the stock if he puts that on the back of a jersey.
I think he's just Junior.
Man, fooled by the typo again. I'm heated. I'm heated out here. That's fine.
I've got Jonathan Adams III. It's a shame.
All right, so just a typo. Got my hopes up for nothing. Anyways, just wanted to shout him out because I think that we're going to be talking about John Adams Jr., even in a stacked wide receiver class, a lot more as we go throughout the season, knowing he's going to put up monster numbers with Arkansas State.
Right, and Lane Hatcher and Blake Anderson, the way they play offense there, I mean, they throw the football around the yard a little bit, right? So it's going to be a big deal. It's funny, he obviously has that breakout game. You had the big game from Myron Mitchell at UAB, who's also an upperclassman eligible to come out. But really, none of the top wide receivers in this class, as far as we see them, have had particularly strong outings thus far. Des Fitzpatrick had a huge catch for Louisville against Western Kentucky. Went for, a 70-yard touchdown. But Fitzpatrick's been shaky with his hands, to be honest with you, thus far. Reggie Roberson in the first game for SMU was 699 in a touchdown. But he didn't necessarily have a particularly standout player or anything. He had a 50-yard bomb, but like both Diami and
Daz Newsome, and were Daz Newsome quiet.
For UNC.
Well, Diami had 694. He didn't get a touchdown, but I mean, he averaged more than 15 a catch. He had a long of 38. I mean, he was still doing his thing.
Right, but like I feel like even like Charleston Rambo wasn't like didn't like light things up. We didn't have a
wow.
standout.
Is this wide receiver class frauds? Print the article.
I feel like we didn't have a standout performance from any of the guys we talked about in summer scouting yet so far this year at wide receiver. But obviously it's early, right?
I mean, speaking of that UNC game, guy on the other side of things for the Syracuse Orange, Andre Sisco. Nabbed his 13th career interceptions in his 23rd game as a starter. Folks.
Is that good?
He has 13 picks in 23 games. If you add both of the forced fumbles that he has had over the last 2 years, that's 15 forced turnovers in 23 games.
Oh, but Trev, he's too aggressive. He plays too aggressive sometimes.
I don't care.
I don't.
The whole point of playing defense is to get takeaways to give the offense an extra possession. Now, can you be reckless to the point where we can't trust you at all back there? No, of course not. In the NFL, it gets a lot more cerebral, gets a lot more assassin-like. You have to be honed in and controlled. But we've said this before. I think that we've seen that from Andre Sisco. He just needs to be a little bit more confident with it. But when it comes to what Ben mentioned during summer scouting, potentially coaching this kind of ball skill aggression and takeaway ability from him, that's what I'm not compromising. This is a first-round safety to me because of how he can attack the ball in the air, how he can attack it in deep zone coverage,
right. What
he can do in a robber role closer to the linebacker level, how he can consistently get from sideline to sideline in both pursuit and when in coverage. Dude, like, this is a first-round safety, I think. I really do, and with him getting yet another takeaway, that just further solidifies my thoughts on him. I think that he is going to be one of my top players in this class unless I really take a look at him and I go, ooh, too much of a liability for me. You mentioned not every coach is going to love him. But the coaches that are ready to invest in him for what he is, I think you are getting a difference maker at safety with Andre Sisco.
I'm with you. And that pick he got against UNC was about as easy as it gets from a read perspective, right? Like, that ball should not have been thrown with Sisco being where he was.
He chucked it up there. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and this is the key thing, is like, a lot of college safeties are not high-pointing that ball and closing on that ball the way that Sisco does. Sisco's ball skills are very natural, right? He's got, like, he played the ball in the air like a wide receiver. You go to somebody like Asante Samuel, who had two interceptions.
I was just about to transition to him.
Yeah, who had two interceptions on the day for Florida State in a loss to Georgia Tech. I wasn't going to let you get away with it.
Me?
No, I'm saying... To every Florida State fan who's listening, hoping I wasn't going to mention it, I'm going to mention it.
Had to.
Florida State loses to Georgia Tech. We love Jeff Collins. Asante Samuel has two picks, and when you watch the plays, it's, you know, batted passes that end up right in his gut, right? It's the quick close and everything like that, but there's what he lacks with his size and his arm length is that high pointing ability that Sisco had. Now, they play completely different positions, so it's not a big deal, but this is what, when you see Sisco as the post safety go up and elevate and catch at the highest point in front of the receiver like that, that's how you want your deep safety addressing the football. And that's a big deal, even if the read wasn't the most difficult read on the face of the planet.
No, I thought the two picks... look, if anybody was ready to gloat on the timeline about Asante Samuel Jr. playing well...
Could have been you.
You know it was me. But I watched both of those interceptions, and I was like... Anybody could have had these picks. You know, like, yeah, they were just easy.
Jeff Sims going to be a good passer for Georgia Tech someday, but not yet, brother.
But look, you play him in off coverage, you let him read the quarterback, he knows how to put his foot in the ground and get where he needs to go, and I like his ball skills. I really do. I was encouraged by him being able to go up, get the ball, get two takeaways himself to start the season, but obviously they were two easy ones there.
You know,
he is still a guy who I would really covet as an off-coverage corner in the NFL. And I think that these two interceptions only make him have some more confidence, which now makes me even more excited to see how this year is going to turn out for him. I hope that this Florida State defense doesn't just mail it in, because like that was a crushing loss this past weekend. So I'm hoping that they don't just like totally mail it in, because I would love to see what some of the studs on that side of the ball do.
I think
when
with a young,
really
new
engaged
head coach, you kind of stay amped up for a little bit. You know what I mean? You expect to get better.
I mean, maybe, but Mike Norvell also like lied about talking to his players about social justice stuff. So like, I don't know, man. It's just, I hope that that's not the case, but I feel like the door is potentially open from my angle for them to not be the biggest fan of Norvell. Maybe I'm wrong though. I hope I'm wrong.
The thing is, like, I like Norvell so much as a scheme guy, so I want him to also not suck as a person. But that's not how that works.
I'd like everybody to not suck as a person. How about that?
That's true. The pressure on Asante Samuel Jr.'s second interception. Marvin Wilson.
Marvin Wilson. Yeah.
In case anyone was wondering. Just because, you know, in case anyone was curious, that's a future second to third round pick, Marvin Wilson, apparently. No problem. It's whatever.
Yeah, ooh, that's you had a little venom on that one.
Still don't get it. Would like someone to explain it to me. What significant games occurred that we have not had a word on? Clemson, Wake Forest. Trevor Lawrence looked amazing.
Spencer Rattler, future GOAT. Oklahoma
with a name
quarterback.
Like Spencer Rattler.
Can we just talk about that real quick?
I turned to Mayor and I said, Mayor, we got to name a kid Spencer Rattler. And Mayor said, under no circumstances. I said, Mayor, he can't not be a starting quarterback somewhere down south if his name's Spencer Rattler. Your name's Spencer Rattler legally. At least, like, Louisiana Tech has to offer you, right? I mean, like,
If you had a child and named him Spencer Rattler, would you then name him Spencer Rattler II, even though he was in no way related to the actual Spencer Rattler?
I mean, I feel like otherwise it would be copyright infringement, right?
Right. I mean, I think you could get sued for it. That's what I'm saying.
But either way, Spencer
Rattler. That wouldn't be a good look.
That arm is live. Woo! He was zinging it. 30 yards, man. Just easy money.
It's easy. Yeah. It's too easy. It's too easy for him. He's going to be fun to watch for a while now. Duke Notre Dame?
Yeah.
Had a couple
Jeremiah
prospects in this one.
Koromoa, who we like he was a rover type for Notre Dame, was playing around the 230s last year.
Yeah.
What's going to be as a true stack linebacker? Well, he's still roving because he's explosive, but he got bigger.
And he plays for Notre Dame. Like, that's not going to change. Like, what he's doing and doing well is probably not going to change till he gets to the NFL.
Right, and so Owosu-Koromoa was highly impactful. Duke under David Cutcliffe, very quick passing game, works to the outside of the numbers, outbreaking stuff a lot. Owosu-Koromoa, who's still listed at 215 for Notre Dame, is, I think, clearly over the 230s at this point.
You think he's that much weight on him?
Yeah.
All right, okay.
I mean, I didn't think he was playing at 215 last year, and watching him against Duke, he's clearly bigger.
He has put on weight. Can he walk over to the other sideline and tell Chris Rumpf how to do it?
Dude, it's not good with Chris Rumpf. Here's the thing. If Chris Rumpf played Owusu-Koromoa's position, we'd be fine. He doesn't. Owusu-Koromoa plays off the ball, sometimes outside of the box.
Yeah, right.
Chris Rumpf plays on the line, on the defensive line, rushing the passer, and he is not long. And I don't think he got significantly denser over the course of the year either. I don't think he put on a significant amount of weight. So I didn't get a big watch on Rumpf as a pass rusher against Robbie Hainsey and Liam Eichenberg, the offensive tackles that you've got there in Notre Dame, both those guys being draftable guys. That's important film to go back and watch. But the main guy that stood out to me in that game was Owusu-Koromoa, who I think he may not be like a top traditional linebacking prospect, especially in a class with Dylan Moses and Micah Parsons. He's not going to get talked about like that. But in terms of playmaking ability, in terms of defensive coordinators who move guys around and have multiple fronts, he is going to be valued in a big way, especially if he tips the scales the way that I think he's going to tip the scales. So he was the guy for me who checked the big box. Mykael Cunningham, Louisville quarterback, that late game against Western Kentucky, I brought up Des Fitzpatrick. Mykael Cunningham, now that I'm thinking about it, it's disrespectful of us to go through that tier two quarterback conversation and not mention his name. Because in terms of physical talent, he's probably on top of everybody. And if he continues to play like he did against Western Kentucky, a little bit of mistake football, but the running ability and the pop on his arm, that thing sings when it comes off, man. I don't know how they found right after Lamar Jackson, another dude with just like a weird arm angle, but it just sings. I mean, it's so easy. He steps into the bucket with pressure in his face, and that thing never dies for velocity. It's really unique. Like, that was unique with Jackson, and then they just did it again in Louisville, and it's special because of what allows them to do in the RPO game. That Scott Satterfield offense needs your quarterback to be able to hit some tight windows from some weird throwing platforms, and Cunningham's exceptional there. So I think that in terms of guys who checked big boxes for me, Owusu-Koramoah, but then Cunningham as well is an important player to talk about. I'm kicking myself that we went through that 10-minute QB4 conversation, and I never once brought up his name. He's a good player.
No, I mean, you know, people just had to make it to the end of the podcast.
Right, you know? See who the real listeners are.
Right. I also wanted to shout out Chaz Surratt, the linebacker from UNC. I didn't catch all of the Syracuse-UNC game, but, man, did he! I thought he looked good. He had 9 tackles, led the team, had 2 sacks, 2.5 tackles for loss, 2 QB hurries. Like, this dude was all over the place, and he looked like he picked up right where he left off last year and is just continuing to get better. And that's something that you and I talked about over the summer scouting. It's like, this is a former quarterback. You know, this is a guy who is converting from the offensive side of the ball over to playing linebacker. And you could tell that the way that he saw the game from the defensive side was very advanced. It was different. He looked like he was going through it in the mind of an offensive player, because that's what he used to be, and he was using that to his advantage coming over to playing linebacker. It was just like the nuances of that new position, he still had to get down. Like, just the natural instincts of playing linebacker, he looked like he had built off of those now going into this season. So I am just continuously excited to see him play, because I think that he is a rock solid prospect. I really do.
2021 NFL
Ben, you
draft.
Know what else is rock solid?
Oh no!
I got him, folks!
I got
him!
No! Anytime you say a rock-related word, I should be suspicious. And I was like, I'm going to transition this to a nice closing conversation about the linebacking class. And you were like, no, Ben, you're an idiot. We have one more ad read. You even tell me!
Instead, we're going to start the closing parts of this podcast by talking about a family-owned auto business that has been serving auto parts to customers online for over 20 years, and that is, of course, the fine folks over at rockauto.com. Guys, if you have listened to us on this podcast before, you've heard me talk about it. If you have any kind of auto needs, whether your car needs an upgrade or a fixing, head over to rockauto.com. Their catalog is super easy to look at. You can find exactly what make and model car you're looking for, see exactly what parts they have in stock, and if they don't have exactly what you're looking for, you can hit them up. Call him, email him, hit him in the comment box. Be like, hey, I was looking for this. I'm looking to make this change to my car. And they're going to be like, hey, okay, we can order that part for you. Or they can point you in the right direction for wherever you need to go, because they're there to help you out. If you end up contacting them, however you do it, just let them know that Locked On NFL Draft sent you. That would really help me and Ben out. It would keep the on-air lights on for this podcast.
Oh, wow.
It would it would really mean a lot to us, the host of the show. RockAuto.com. Basically all the auto parts that you're ever going to need. And if they don't have it, they're going to find a way to help you one way or the other, because they've got great customer service, great prices, everything you're ever going to need over at RockAuto.com. All right, closing conversation. Are we still doing linebackers, or are we just
after what you said about Surratt and after what I said about Owusu-Koramoah, I was just thinking to myself, man, Micah Parsons, Dylan Moses, Chaz Surratt, Jabril Cox, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, Nick Bolton. This is
Cameron McGrone from Michigan said that he was going back to Michigan, I think.
Oh, yeah, word?
I want to be clear here. I read that somewhere, but yeah. I don't think he said it. Now, if you're like returning to school as a prospect, you don't always have to have this like declaration of like, I'm returning to school, because it's status quo if you have a year of eligibility left. Like, you could just be like, right. Yeah, duh, like I'm just still here. So maybe he's not going to announce, but I read something, man, it feels like almost a month ago though, and it was like Cameron McGrone returning to Michigan, won't declare for the NFL job, because he was another guy that I really liked as an off linebacker in this class.
Yeah, I'm Twitter searching. I don't see anything yet, but yeah, like, him, I was looking through more names like Paolo Paula Ie Naoteote.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. Aaron Brown, Paula Ie Naoteote.
It took me less than I thought it was going to, you know what I mean?
You could have just said, dude, the name Pete Werner was right there. You could have just gone with Pete.
I wanted to bring Werner up a good linebacking prospect.
And that's why you didn't talk about Nate Landman. Oh man, taking shots at myself from last year's summer scouting.
You wanna rip on yourself, that's fine by me. Never forget. Well, actually, I can't do this because I'm pretty sure I also stand for Patty Fisher in that
you
very
did.
Same podcast.
Yes, you did. Yeah.
So we'll just pretend that never happened.
I'm just going to delete that podcast.
I'm looking at this draft class and thinking we did not have a great linebacker class in 2020. I think we've got a really, really nice one on our hands in 2021.
Yeah, I agree. And
that's just going to force a whole other conversation about linebacker value. Yay!
Linebackers are the running backs of the defense at this point when we're talking about value. Okay, I'm pulling up next week's college football schedule because we're not going to dedicate a whole podcast just to college football for the rest of the week. So I wanted to shout out some of the matchups that we might have coming up that we're looking forward to. Pittsburgh is facing Syracuse. So you're getting Patrick Jones second, pass rusher from Pittsburgh. You're getting Andre Sisco. Those are two guys that you could watch there. Duke's playing Boston College. You can watch Chris Rump still desire to put on weight and eat more peanut butter sandwiches. Notre Dame's playing South Florida. That could actually be a fun one. Marshall, believe it or not, Ben, has the number one scoring offense in college football right now.
Our thundering herd, baby.
59 points per game. They've only played one game. Oh, wait, hold up. Texas has also scored 59 points per game, so they're tied at number one. But then you know who number two is? It's who? North Texas.
Our mean green, baby.
We got to get a Texas-North Texas showdown.
We have Baylor-Houston playing each other just because they were like, yo, you free? And Houston was like, yeah, man, I'm free. They're going to play Saturday?
That was
Saturday.
Wild. I saw that tweet come across the timeline 2 days ago, and it was like, yeah, Houston and Baylor have agreed to play next week. And I'm like, what? What?
Casual.
I've got the University of Florida trying to get me excited about a home-and-home with Notre Dame in like 2038. And you're telling me that Houston and Baylor can play next week.
Just you free there? I was about to say Major Applewhite. Wow, Chad. You free there, Dana? Yeah, I'm free. Dave. First name basis.
First name basis. Miami's playing Louisville, which everybody said that Miami was back after last week's win. Louisville obviously been highlighted some good opponents there. Oh, dang. I was about to say we get Virginia Tech next week, but it's postponed.
Yeah, Virginia Tech, I believe, is not doing great. Texas Tech's got 75 COVID tests right now.
Dang.
I think 69 are recovering or recovered.
I'm not going to say nice.
69 have recovered. Six cases are active.
I'm not going to say nice. Even though it's 69.
I mean, like, it's just, I mean, and you know, we were all like, why did they only beat Houston Baptist by two? And it's like, well, it's because half of the team is ineligible.
Yeah, a lot of, it's the whining parts of this year. I mean, heck, like Ben said at the beginning of the podcast, we could get off the pod here, and in 12 hours, the Big Ten could be like, all right, we're back.
And if so, we will have a podcast.
Yeah, we will have an emergency podcast about it. But I guess I'll leave the door open, you know, depending on what we're going to do on Wednesday. If we've got big news to talk about at college football, maybe I lied. Maybe I said that we're going to dip back into the college football well, but you know we're getting back to the NFL. Ben and I have been watching a ton of tape. I got a lot more tape that I'm going to watch later tonight and also on Tuesday. So I'm going to have some NFL takes that I'm going to want to get off from week one going into week two. I know the same is with Ben. That's what we're going to be talking about throughout the rest of the week. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.